Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3 or 4 p.m. That is Pacific. No, it isn't. It is Central Time. And today is September 21st. And I thought we'd kick off with the Hang Seng. It was up today, having been down on really in an abrupt manner over the last 10 sessions. I think that sentiment is beginning to turn towards the potential that the whole China Evergrande story is going to be resolved in some way. Probably in a fashion like a shotgun wedding between some of the better established property companies or banks, and that the significant liabilities that are really that the company is beholden to a large number of retail investors will probably be resolved in some manner that's not going to create a massive public uproar. At least that is the hope. And of course, there's the scope that we're going to see a significant resolution, or at least some kind of conclusion reached on Thursday, when the company is very likely to miss some coupon payments on its outstanding debt. But one thing that is interesting is that we are seeing that some of the technology companies have not broken down. And Tencent, for example, has bounced from, or at least stabilized above the low from August. Alibaba is right in the region of the low from just over the last month. It was in negative territory today, but still holding this $150 area. When we think about some of those companies that have pulled back most aggressively over the course of the last while, well, Pinduoduo is also holding the region of the lows from back in August. And then Meituan is also one of the more popular social media platforms, and it has also found, or at least it's not breaking downwards. So certainly there is the scope here for some unwinding of short-term oversold conditions in the event that we do not get either a long-term capital management or a Lehman event. I think that there's a lot of comparisons being thrown around, but I don't think there is any real rational comparison about what's going on right now, because it's a massively indebted company which has borrowed money from everyone. And when we think about everyone, well, then it really does potentially also come through to the cryptocurrency world, because Bitcoin has been down in a really quite dynamic manner on 3 days over the last month, and it looks increasingly like a lower rally high. And it's got a lot of work to do in order to really demonstrate that it's still in a demand-dominated environment. And finishing off the $40,000 level today is not enough to reinstill confidence. But potentially, the rumors that were circulating in the last month about Tether having deployed a significant number of its reserves into Evergrande commercial paper, they could potentially be true. And then by liquidating some of those holdings, and also then liquidating some of the Bitcoin that they hold, that could be putting pressure on the Bitcoin price as well. What it also suggests is that the feedback into the conventional the financial sector, the property sector, may be limited, that because the risk has been so well spread out. And certainly there is the potential here that we're going to see a significant liquidity infusion, because the one big comparison that we have is that these types of things can snowball. And when one company that's highly levered and highly integrated with the economy goes bust, it tends to put pressure on others. So we've had a lot of sympathy selling. And then we can also look at companies like Yuzhou, which have pulled back really quite abruptly. and have been trending down in a really quite profound manner over the course of the last while. So that's an incredible downtrend from the peak back in 2018. But the big difference is that the company itself is not trading at the same yield as Evergrande. It's trading at a yield in the order of about 20%, give or take, whereas China Evergrande is trading, its bonds are trading at well in excess of 40, and in some cases considerably higher than that. So we've seen a lot of selling pressure coming through in the property sector, but some property companies are less likely to go bust than others. At least that's what the bond market is telling us. They've all pulled back. They're all under pressure. But there's certainly the scope for a significant number to survive. And then, if that's going to be the case, then there'll be a buy the dip scenario that will become more credible if we do, in fact, see liquidity getting pushed into the market. So we had a bounce on Wall Street yesterday, and then the stock market was pretty steady in here today. We had in Europe a rebound in European equities, so it's looking like the potential here for another higher reaction low, and that this is a pretty much a global phenomenon. We have a very high degree of commonality right across North America, Europe, Australia. Australia has pulled back more, and it is now in the region of the trend mean. And a good part of the reason for that is because of the weakness that we've seen in the iron ore market. So Fortescue Metals, for example, has pulled back in a really quite abrupt manner. And it is now beginning to find at least some support. It's tempting to think that this is all because of the trouble in the property markets, but we have to at least give some consideration to the political motivation behind stamping out excess steel production and aluminium production in service to the objective of cleaning up the air over Beijing ahead of the Winter Olympics in February. So that would suggest that we're not going to have a big rally in iron ore prices, at least until after the Olympics of 2022. And that suggests that we could be in for a volatile trading environment for at least the next 5 or 6 months. When we then just look further into the commodity complex, gas prices in the UK popped on the upside yesterday, closed in the region of the peak in here today. Now we've had a somewhat larger pullback, but that was an awfully big upward dynamic yesterday, and it suggests that we still have continued pressure. There are questions about whether Gazprom is withholding supply from European markets in an effort to ensure that the Nord Stream 2 pipeline will in fact be opened in a hurry, and that Europe won't drag its feet in permissioning it. But it's probably a discussion that's going on within Gazprom. They have their domestic priorities, they have international priorities, and obviously, if Russia pushes this issue too hard, then it makes it less likely that the pipeline will get permissioned in a hurry. So, obviously, there is a lot of frayed nerves right now because the price has gone up so much. Gazprom's stock has broken on the upside, and it's one of the few energy companies that is really trending higher in a dynamic manner in here right now. When we think then about other big gas producers like Royal Dutch Shell, the share is now right in the region of this 1500p level. It's the upper side of the base formation. So a sustained move above that level would at least begin to confirm that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. And of course, Royal Dutch Shell is selling out of the Permian, and it would appear to be concentrating more on natural gas production. one way or another, as and the UK in particular is suffering from shortages of foodstuffs, and then this is all as a result of bottlenecks arising from the pandemic and Brexit, and the lack of workers and the need for more drivers, more people stacking shelves, and then the absence of carbon dioxide, which really is ironic, that is curtailing foodstuff preservation. All of that is creating demand for the. And I do need to get the tick. Yes, Yara International is one of the companies that's benefiting from this kind of demand. The share is now back in the region of the upper side of the underlying range. Norway is going to increase its production of natural gas in service to supplying the European markets, and that should help to moderate some of the demand, or I guess the supply shortage that we have in Europe right now. Ultimately, the argument for Europe is about energy independence, and the significant investments that have been made in renewable energy are as much about the desire to decarbonize as they are about energy independence. That's the point I've been making for a good long time now, that it's a European priority to become energy independent. So they're going to continue investing in wind and solar, but that doesn't answer the question of where does base load come from. And Vestas Wind Systems, for example, is now steadying from the region of the trend mean, so that's generally positive. But uranium would appear to be one of the big answers, and the Global X uranium ETF is steadying in the region of the 25 area, and it might yet pull back further, but it would really need to sustain a move below the trend mean in order to question the recovery scenario. Because as the political imperative to become energy independent, as well as to decarbonize, coalesce, well, then it's really killing two birds with one stone to pioneer better nuclear technology. And that is the answer to where the base load electricity is going to come from to fund the evolution of electric vehicles, and to then also to change the reliance on imported gas. The vast majority of homes in Europe and the UK rely on gas for heating and for cooking, and it's not a commodity that they have easy access to. So it really does suggest that there's going to be significant efforts in Europe to focus on electricity and for both heating and for cooking. But if that's the case, then there has to be a massive investment in electricity generation capacity. And to do that without carbon means that there will have to be a significant concentration on base load capacity, and the only answer then has to be uranium. So we're certainly in an interesting environment right now. When we think about the bond markets, I think we're in an environment where there's a range, and the range has got a very mild upward bias. There's, on one hand, you have retail investors, and anyone who pays bills can see that their bills are rising, and that's particularly true of food and transportation costs, and the costs of buying a car have certainly increased. So, and then of course property prices have increased, and rents are starting to catch up with that. So that's certainly contributing to the perception of inflation. But the type of inflation that the Federal Reserve and other central banks measure, well, it's not firing. It doesn't include energy or food prices. So they just think of those as too volatile. And they believe that it's transitory because the price of new vehicles will eventually, and used vehicles for that matter, will eventually start to come back down. And that rents will eventually stabilize. So they believe that the rising inflationary pressures will stabilize. But the reality is that it's likely that we're going to see that these rising prices will eventually stabilize at higher levels than we've seen over most of the last decade. So that's going to contribute further to inflationary pressures, which is why we have a mild upward bias to these ranges. But until we have a clear evidence of much more spending and or less demand for bonds, where there's certainly a more of an inflationary bias and an acceptance of that by investors, well then yields are likely to remain reasonably well contained. Where there's likely to be pressure is if the big spending plans that are being proposed in the USA are in fact passed. Now, when we think about stock markets and liquidity, the outlook for the stock market remains very liquidity dependent. We've now had a 5% pullback, the first time since October of last year. So this is a somewhat larger pullback than we've seen in a while. We're still somewhat overbought relative to the trend mean, and we're beginning to see just some evidence of support coming through. I think it is too early to suggest yet that this is a meaningful area of support. We may be moving into a somewhat lengthier range than we've seen over the course of the last year, and that would at least help to unwind the overbought condition. But as long as China does move to rescue its property markets and the Federal Reserve does not rush to taper, well, then the liquidity question will remain, or will at least have a partial answer, and that will help to support asset prices. If, however, the US fails to push through a big spending program, well, then fiscal spending will act as a headwind, and that may contribute to more volatile environments on global stocks. But we're also seeing some evidence of rotation, and companies like Uber moving from loss-making to profitability, well, that was rewarded with a significant upward dynamic in here today and bouncing from the upper side of the underlying base formation. So there are certainly isolated incidences of companies that are doing well in this environment. And certainly, we've had a setback in Chinese technology. We've had a setback in some of the more speculative portions of the technology sector, and we're starting to see at least some evidence of support coming through. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.